Blessings of the Triple Gem, Theravada Saranai. Today we're examining the third doorway to Nibbana, pleasant practice with slow realization. And this is based on the Asubha Sutta and referencing the insight pathway set out in the Pitaka disclosure or Pathagopadesa. If you're new to hearing about the Buddha's teaching on the four nutriments and the four modes of practice, you can catch up by viewing the video playlist titled Four Nutriments as well as Doorways to Nibbana. In simple terms, the four nutriments examine the arising phenomena of suffering, so samudaya and pali, and the four modes of practice examine the passing away phenomena of suffering, so sotthangama in pali. All these doorways to Nibbana are part of the supramundane path and practice. So the goal is to realize the cessation of all suffering, which means Nibbana. Let's begin by paying homage to the Triple Gem. We can bow our heads and Anjali. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dhamma. Homage to the Noble Sangha. We are grateful to the Buddha and the Noble Ones for teaching us this Noble Dhamma, and we strive to be easy to instruct so we can uplift our minds to understand this Noble Dhamma. With the first doorway to Nibbana, it was the medicine for greed. The second doorway to Nibbana is the medicine for hatred. And this third doorway to Nibbana, along with the fourth doorway to Nibbana, are the medicines for delusion. With this third doorway to Nibbana, the Buddha's medicine is very strong as it directly targets overcoming wrong views throughout this insight pathway, particularly that of the self or me and mine, by applying wisdom that is the knowledge of the destruction of all suffering. So the noble truth of the cessation of suffering, that is Nibbana, is heavily contemplated. The Buddha also gets us to contemplate the mind and to properly understand the mind and the mental states, including sickness of our perceptions, so we know how to diagnose and uplift the mind. Noble attainment or attaining to the supramundane by realizing path and fruit plays a key part throughout this insight pathway, as well as the seven factors of enlightenment. So let's have a quick look at what we'll cover in this session. Firstly, how to get the best out of this session, so our usual tips and reminders. Then we'll look at the prerequisites for this third doorway to Nibbana. Then we'll recap the four nutriments and the four modes of practice, and what kinds of spiritual faculties and powers are associated with this mode of practice. Then we'll look at what underpins the third doorway to Nibbana, and deep dive into the insight pathway for pleasant practice with slow realization. And at the end, we'll recap the meditation instructions and share the merit and the blessings. Let's now go over our tips and reminders to get the best out of this session. The first thing is to keep an open mind, to be open and attentive to the Buddha's words in this discourse and the instructions for today's meditation. Also, be okay with not understanding everything. Whatever you understand and are able to practice in this session, maybe what is needed right now, the rest will come later. And remember that we're all learners or trainees, sekhas. We come with the Dhamma that we have already learned and practiced, and we're here to lean on each other to make effort towards building on that, further developing on the Noble Eightfold Path, and we are walking this path together. We also need to apply ourselves to the Buddha's words, so give yourself the opportunity to connect with the Buddha's words and those of the Noble Ones. Allow the spiritual faculties to sharpen so we can establish the right view. And meditate applying your own examples. We say this time and time again. And it's really that whenever we have the opportunity to meditate together, when we apply ourselves to these instructions and words of the Buddha, we try to connect with the Dhamma. As we said, the Buddha's teaching is a wisdom pathway. So when we see the Dhamma directly through our own examples and gaining direct insight, then we see the Dhamma. By seeing the Dhamma, we see the Buddha. And by seeing the Buddha, we see the Dhamma. And lastly, let's have good wishes for everyone, anyone who has helped us on this spiritual path right up until this point. Let's briefly go over the prerequisites for this third doorway to Nibbana. In the Vitara Sutta, this is Anguttara Nikaya, chapter 4, discourse number 162, the Buddha asked, "And what is the practice that is pleasant with sluggish direct knowledge or slow realization?" Here, someone by nature is not strongly prone to lust and does not often experience pain and dejection born of lust. By nature, he is not strongly prone to hatred and does not often experience pain and dejection born of hatred. By nature, he is not strongly prone to delusion and does not often experience pain and dejection born of delusion. So when we contrast this with what we've previously examined for the first and second doorways to Nibbana, or painful practices with slow and quick realization, in that case, a person is by nature strongly prone to lust, hatred, and delusion, and often experiences pain, dejection, born of lust, hatred, and delusion. So what this tells us is that these pleasant practices, so third and fourth doorways to Nibbana, are for those who are a little more developed on the path, who have some skill in developing the mind in accordance with the Buddha's instructions, and have penetrated some Dhamma with wisdom. Because this is the case, and it will become clearer once we deep dive into the insight pathway, there are some prerequisites for this third doorway to Nibbana. The first is understanding how to develop the four jhanas. This is needed because the very first step of the insight pathway is to enter into the four jhanas. And secondly, understanding the four nutriments. So we know that we are sustained by nutriment. So this is part of the arising phenomena of suffering. And when we develop these modes of practice, these doorways to Nibbana, we are contemplating the passing away of suffering. And so this third doorway to Nibbana is the medicine for mental volition as nutriment and going the wrong way with fear. So understanding this is also a part of being able to practice this insight pathway. Thirdly, having the ability to purify the mind. So the Buddha has taught us through many suttas, including the Vatupama Sutta, Anangana Sutta, Karanimetta Sutta, how to contemplate the mind. When we actively purify the mind, we understand how to remove unwholesome states and mental stains that are rooted in greed, hatred, and delusion. And in this way, we can develop the Noble Eightfold Path. Then we also need to understand the exposition of the elements. So this is in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya Discourse number 140. This is very important because this is how we overcome the wrong view of self or me and mine. When we contemplate the six elements correctly, we develop supreme wisdom that is the knowledge of the destruction of all suffering. So in that way, there is no volition to construct. And then we also need to understand the pathway of renunciation. This appears in the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya Discourse number 137. This is very helpful because it's an essential component of the Buddha's wisdom path. And when we apply this pathway of renunciation, it ultimately leads to Nibbana. When we meditate, this is primarily what we are doing. And then lastly, the seven factors of enlightenment, so Bhojanga Sanyutta. So this is also very important because it helps us to incline, slant, slope towards Nibbana. And this strengthens the mind so it doesn't fall for sick perception. So before we deep dive into the actual insight pathway for third doorway to Nibbana, let's recap the four nutriments and the four modes of practice. So the Buddha taught that there's these four unprofitable directions that begin with the four nutriments. So in Pali, chakaro, ahara, which are explained with similes in the Puttamansa Sutta. These four nutriments are what the Buddha terms acquisitions or upadhi in Pali. They are to be understood, and after being understood, they're to be relinquished. Otherwise, we go the four wrong way. So chatari atgati gamanam in Pali. So these four unprofitable directions rooted in greed, hatred, and delusion, these are the doorways that will result in rebirth in samsara. So we can see the physical nutriment leads to going the wrong way due to desire. Contact as nutriment leads to going the wrong way due to hate. Mental volition as nutriment leads to going the wrong way due to fear. And this is the one we're focusing on today. And consciousness as nutriment leads to going the wrong way due to delusion. These four nutriments have craving as their source, craving as their origin, and they are born and produced from craving. So this is the tanha in Pali. So the four nutriments are part of this arising phenomena of suffering, samudaya. Now, the Buddha taught that there are the opposites, which are the four profitable directions that begin with the four modes of practice. In Pali, this is Chittasso Patipada. And this is explained in the chapter on practice, the Patipadavagga in Anguttara Nikaya. These modes of practice are like the Buddha's medicine for the sickness of the unprofitable directions. And so it's very beneficial for us to make effort to understand and properly develop them in order to access the immeasurable divine abodes. These four profitable directions are rooted in non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. And so they're called the doorways to Nibbana. So we can see the painful practice with slow realization leads to immeasurable loving kindness. Painful practice with quick realization leads to immeasurable compassion. So we've looked at those two before. And today's meditation is on pleasant practice with slow realization, which leads to immeasurable joy. And the one that is still to come is pleasant practice with quick realization. And this is what leads to immeasurable equanimity. When we develop these modes of practice, we are also developing all 37 Bodhipakya Dhammas. So this translates as the wings of awakening or the enlightenment path factors, and they're all wholesome Dhammas. So this includes the four establishments of mindfulness, Satipatthana, the four right striving or Sammapadana, Noble Eightfold Path, so Arya Tantika Magga, four bases of power, so these are the Iddhipadas, seven enlightenment factors or Bhujangas, five powers or Balas, and five spiritual faculties, which are the Indriyas. So as we quoted earlier from the Vitara Sutta, these modes of practice were explained in terms of whether a person was full of greed, hatred, and delusion, also how quickly their spiritual faculties manifested, and how quickly they penetrated the Dhamma. Today we're examining pleasant practice with slow realization, so a person is not strongly prone to lust, hatred, and delusion, and doesn't often experience pain and dejection born of lust, hatred, and delusion. So this is why this is a pleasant practice and it's suitable. But in this particular case with the third doorway to Nibbana, one's spiritual faculties manifest weakly. So this is in reference to the faculty of conviction, the faculty of energy, the faculty of mindfulness, the faculty of concentration, the faculty of wisdom. Because these five faculties are weak, the result is slow or sluggish attainment. And the Vaya Sutta is where the Buddha says that painful practice with slow realization is inferior in both ways because it is painful and slow. And painful practice with quick realization is inferior because it's painful. And pleasant practice with slow realization, the one we're looking at today, is still inferior because it's slow. And pleasant practice with quick realization, which is to come, is said to be superior of all the other ones because it's superior in both ways. It's pleasant and it's quick. So it's beneficial for us to methodically learn all four modes of practice because they're medicine for the four nutriments. And we've highlighted before when we've gone through the painful practices with slow and quick realization that we can't assume that we can accomplish these pleasant practices without understanding the Dhamma of the other pathways because they're linked and they work together. So from a seka or trainee perspective, when we understand both parts, so the four nutriments and the four modes of practice, this is another way to penetrate the arising and passing away of suffering. So in the process, what we're doing is we're sharpening our spiritual faculties to penetrate all this Dhamma and to realize full liberation from this whole mess of suffering. So this is the expanded version of the four profitable directions, starting with the four modes of practice. We can see there are 10 steps in each direction. So we start with the mode of practice, then enter into the jhanas, we establish mindfulness and enter into an abiding. Then we apply right striving and contemplate a noble truth. We make a determination and develop the concentration and skillful means that is associated with happiness. And this results in one of the immeasurable divine abodes. It's important to note that each of these profitable directions activates the Noble Eightfold Path and the other Bodhipakya Dhammas, as we've said. So today, with the pleasant practice with slow realization, the result will be the immeasurable joy. And with this third profitable direction, the result is not an ordinary or mundane level of joy that we would find in the world. Instead, it's an immeasurable joy that is underpinned by a deeper understanding of the mind and the sickness of our perceptions, how we get caught with wrong views, and what the noble truth of cessation of suffering really means. As we said before, this is the medicine for mental volition as nutriment. And that is primarily driven by the perversion that there is me and mine in what is not me and mine, so self in the not self. What we do is we take these five aggregates or sense spheres as me and mine. We take them as self and construct an identity view and cling to that. This third unprofitable pathway is driven by wrong views of this is mine, I am this is myself. So there are 62 kinds of wrong views described in Brahmajala Sutta. And this is what drives mental volition as nutriment. When we wisely contemplate, we start to understand how we construct based on the sickness in our perceptions, not just in me and mine, but also in beauty or attractiveness, pleasure and permanency. Due to craving, we constantly misapprehend and end up going the wrong way with fear. All the unwholesome states of mind arise because we keep operating from sick perceptions and wrong views. We operate on this basis most of the time. If we take a simple example, when we strongly identify with this physical body as me and mine or self, we live in fear of becoming harmed or being insulted or falling sick or so on. Unwholesome states such as anger, envy, stinginess, and more, they arise out of the wrong view and attachment to this body we have taken as me and mine or self. But if we understand through contemplating the truth about the physical body made up of the four great elements through our sutta meditations, or even in this insight pathway, wisdom arises so we don't go the wrong way with fear. And the examples expand from there to other material things that we take as me and mine, or even subtle things such as our skills or ability to enter into higher concentrations or even noble attainment. So in this meditation today, the third profitable direction, or doorway to Nibbana, helps us to overcome what is contained in mental volition as nutriment, step by step, as well as how to keep the mind uplifted so it doesn't fall back. If we're able to penetrate this insight pathway really well, we will see how powerful and beneficial it is. Let's now briefly compare the two insight pathways that are unprofitable and profitable direction. So the Pithakopadesa outlines the pairings of how we overcome craving for mental volition as nutriment by the pleasant practice with slow realization. As we said, mental volition as nutriment is part of the delusion path. As we navigate the unprofitable path, we become more and more sick and need medicine. So pleasant practice with slow realization is part of the non-delusion path, and it's the medicine the Buddha prescribes to overcome this specific sickness. So the Pithakopadesa says, the pairing off or play is this, four nutriments and four modes of practice, four perversions and four establishments of mindfulness, four clingings and four mental absorptions, four bonds and abidings, four body ties and right endeavors, four taints and wonderful and marvelous ideas, floods and determinations, darts and concentrations, steadying points for consciousness and ideas connected with happiness, four goings the wrong way, and four immeasurable states. This is the construction of the profitable and unprofitable opposites. In this way, we can see, if we develop the meditations, they comprise a very gradual teaching or training and a method within each insight pathway. The Buddha is a very insightful doctor who has undertaken over 100,000 eons of R&D, so there is very precise medicine for each ailment. When we look specifically at this third profitable direction, the Pithakopadesa says, the pleasant practice with slow realization when developed in practice continuously fulfills the third meditation. The third meditation fulfilled fulfills the third establishment of mindfulness. The third establishment of mindfulness fulfilled fulfills the third abiding. The third abiding fulfilled fulfills the third right striving. The third right striving fulfilled fulfills the third wonderful and marvelous idea. The third wonderful and marvelous idea fulfilled fulfills the third determination. The third determination fulfilled fulfills concentration due to energy. Concentration due to energy fulfilled the enlightenment factors. The enlightenment factors fulfills immeasurable joy. So this is what we are learning and will practice today. So let's begin our deep dive and start with what the Buddha has said in the Asubha Sutta. And what is practice that is pleasant with sluggish direct knowledge or slow realization? Here, secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in the first jhana, which consists of rapture and pleasure born of seclusion, accompanied by thought and examination. With the subsiding of thought and examination, he enters and dwells in the second jhana, which has internal placidity and unification of mind, and consists of rapture and pleasure born of concentration, without thought and examination. With the fading away as well of rapture, he dwells equanimous and mindful and clearly comprehending. He experiences pleasure with the body. He enters and dwells in the third jhana, of which the noble ones declare, he is equanimous, mindful, one who dwells happily. With the abandoning of pleasure and pain, and with the previous passing away of joy and dejection, he enters and dwells in the fourth jhana, neither painful nor pleasant, which has purification of mindfulness by equanimity. He dwells depending upon these five trainee powers, the power of conviction, the power of moral shame, the power of fear of wrongdoing, the power of energy, and the power of wisdom. These five spiritual faculties arise in him feebly or weakly. So this is the faculty of conviction, the faculty of energy, the faculty of mindfulness, the faculty of concentration, and the faculty of wisdom. Because these five spiritual faculties are feeble or weak, he sluggishly or slowly attains the immediacy condition for the destruction of the taint. This is called practice that is pleasant with sluggish direct knowledge or slow realization. With these pleasant practices, as the Buddha highlighted in the Vitara Sutta, a person is not strongly prone to greed, hatred, and delusion. So as a result, having developed a certain level of wisdom, one is able to be secluded from sensual pleasures and unwholesome states, finding more happiness in the higher concentrations than in sensual pleasures. What we know from Venerable Ananda's teaching in the Sekapatipada Sutta and also the Buddha's teaching in the Nagarupama Sutta is the Buddha, they talked about the four jhanas, that they constitute the higher mind and are pleasant dwellings in this very life, which one gains at will without trouble or difficulty. So this is considered a fundamental part of the trainee's mode of progress because they're part of the 15 accomplishments in conduct when perfected, and they're key to the third and fourth doorways to Nibbana to overcome delusion. As the Buddha stated, for all of these modes of practice, we cultivate and rely upon our trainee powers and spiritual faculties to penetrate this noble Dhamma that leads to direct insight and path and fruit, and provides us with the conditions for the destruction of the taints. Here, our spiritual faculties are feeble or weak for this third doorway to Nibbana because they haven't been developed. They're relatively new. Therefore, slow realization or sluggish direct knowledge is the result. And this means we realize Nibbana slowly. So there are 10 parts to this meditation or insight pathway for pleasant practice with slow realization. And the first part requires us to enter into the jhanas because we establish right concentration. The Buddha has given his standard description for each jhana and how one moves from first jhana to the second, to the third, and then to the fourth jhana. Depending on one's level of skill or proficiency, one can develop up to all four jhanas, but at a minimum, one needs to have at least one jhana out of the four to start the meditation. The Buddha doesn't specify a specific meditation object, so we can pick our own. For example, we already know we can enter into the first jhana by going through the first profitable direction, so painful practice with slow realization. We can also contemplate the 16 mental stains in the Vatthupama Sutta to enter the jhanas. Or we can go straight to the fourth jhana by correctly establishing mindfulness, contemplating if it is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change, is it worth taking as me and mine? So there are many sutta meditations we've learned from the Tibetan Vitaka Sutta, Paraniyametta Sutta. All these meditations help us to enter the jhanas. So you pick the one that is suitable. What this is showing is that by thought and examination, so vitakka vichara, we are activating the Buddha's pathway to renunciation. If you remember in the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya Discourse number 137, the Buddha gave a teaching on the sixfold base, and as part of that teaching explained joy, sadness, and equanimity of household life, and the joy, sadness, and equanimity of renunciation, and this pathway of renunciation that ultimately leads to nibbana. When we apply the instructions from that teaching, whenever we meditate, this is how we lean towards nibbana. So when we enter into the jhanas, we abandon sensual pleasures and unwholesome states. We give up sensual thoughts, ill will thoughts, harming thoughts. So we are abandoning household joy for sensual pleasures with the support of renunciate joy by developing the four jhanas. When we meditate, we know for ourselves that this is more superior. As we wisely contemplate, what we are effectively developing are thoughts of renunciation, so nekama vitakka, to overcome thoughts of sensuality, ill will, and harming. For example, let's say we're happy when we buy a new smartphone or when we receive a gift from someone. So what happens is we have sensual thoughts about those things, but let's say we now contemplate that these items are unlasting and subject to change, therefore suffering. Then what arises is a greater sense of renunciation towards these particular sensual objects. Having seen that, we go towards jhana, and what we experience is the happiness of entering into jhana or concentration. Now, if we're skilled, we can remain in jhanas for a very long time, and the happiness and pleasure we get far exceeds what we get from sensual pleasures. So this is the skillful way the Buddha has taught to abandon the happiness or gratification we get from sensual pleasures. The Buddha calls this karma sukha. And when it comes to household sadness, so this is what we experience as material loss or when we see our loved ones aging or similar, then instead of swirling in the suffering and sadness of those things, the Buddha encouraged us to reflect on renunciate sadness. So we would contemplate an arahant who has perfected the path or someone who has realized noble attainment. And what arises is the sadness of having not yet attained. So we would think the person who attained must be experiencing or abiding with happiness. And we think to ourselves, well, when am I going to realize noble attainment? Or when will I realize nibbana, the complete liberation from all suffering? So this is the skillful way the Buddha teaches to abandon household sadness with the support of renunciate sadness. Because the sadness regarding the goal of complete liberation from suffering is greater than the sadness due to material loss from sensual pleasures or aging of sensual pleasures. And the one based on renunciation is actually said to be more honorable than the one based on household life and sensual pleasures. And then when it comes to household equanimity, this arises due to contacting an object with equanimity. It's neither pleasurable nor painful, and the experience is limited, as in it doesn't go beyond that particular object. So for example, we may have equanimity towards an object in our home, such as the curtain. And so the neither pleasurable nor painful feeling is limited to that particular object, to those curtains. It only changes if we see something better in somebody else's home or something. Now, in contrast, if we contemplate that all curtains are unlasting, subject to change and therefore suffering, they have this death-bound nature, then with this understanding of Dhamma, we reach renunciate equanimity. And this arises due to concentration of mind. So the Buddha calls this the equanimity of a noble person. So this is how we abandon household equanimity with the support of renunciate equanimity, which is the superior one. Now, as we can see from this pathway of renunciation, the Buddha didn't stop there. He kept contemplating and developing along this pathway of renunciation, seeing how all these things are constructed, even the more subtle things, and therefore they're to be abandoned. And as we've said before, this is the pathway that takes us all the way to Nibbana. So we will reference this pathway of renunciation again as we develop this third doorway of Nibbana. So we begin the meditation with at least one of the four jhanas. With the first jhana, we have to contemplate the Buddha's words for our meditation object and connect with them, because we need to arouse and maintain the thoughts of renunciation in order to earn and sustain the rapture born of seclusion from sensuality. So this part of our meditation is quite coarse, it's not subtle. And then with the second jhana, we recognize we no longer need to heavily contemplate our meditation object because we have the rapture and happiness born of concentration. So we let go of thought and examination. The rapture we experience in the second jhana is more intense, and we can become very attached to it. But after a while, we realize that even this rapture has its limitations because it's linked with the physical experience, and we want to experience the happiness without any physical limitations. So by letting go of the rapture, we go towards the third jhana, which only has mental happiness. But in the third jhana, there's a small problem because we have understood that in the Buddha's teaching, he talks about the noble truth of suffering. And so then we need to wisely contemplate the happiness we are reaching in this jhana. If there is pleasurable feeling, then painful feeling is its counterpart. And we know attachment lies latent in the pleasurable or happy feeling. Therefore, our mindfulness is not complete. We can be deceived by this happiness. And so there's a danger in attaching to this happiness because it's only temporary. By abandoning both happiness and suffering, we incline towards the fourth jhana, which is better, more stable, and our mindfulness gets purified by equanimity. So when we enter into the jhanas, to a certain degree, the mind is no longer sick because we've abandoned the five hindrances and we experience these progressive cessation. So we now develop, if we haven't done so already, to the third jhana. So for this insight pathway, the third jhana is emphasized because the mind is relatively stable. The third jhana is the medicine for clinging to views, so ditti upadana. With the third jhana, the sadness faculty and the pain faculty and the joy faculty have ceased upon attaining into the first, second, and third jhanas respectively. Only the pleasure faculty is still active. What we know, and we've discussed this before from the Pathagopadesa, is that when the pleasure faculty and the joy faculty are present, mindfulness is not completely purified. So in the third jhana, although the joy faculty has ceased, the pleasure faculty is still active. So as we said, there are flaws in our mindfulness. It's only in the fourth jhana, when we give up the pleasure as well as the pain, then the pleasure faculty ceases. So our mindfulness gets purified with equanimity. Now, in the third jhana, when the pain faculty and the sadness faculty are not present because they were given up in the first and second jhana, there is a lack of clear comprehension when they're present. So with their cessation, by entering into the third jhana, we actually have clear comprehension. We have this sampajanya. And this is what we need to develop the next part of this insight pathway, which is the third establishment of mindfulness or contemplation of mind, cittanupassana. Cittanupassana is the medicine for the perversion there is me and mine in the not me and mine, or self in the not self. So here we can refer to the Mahasatipatthana Sutta, and this is an extract where the Buddha has stated, "And how, bhikkhus, does a bhikkhu abide contemplating mind as mind? Here a bhikkhu understands mind affected by lust as mind affected by lust. And mind affected by lust, mind unaffected by lust as mind unaffected by lust. He understands mind affected by hate as mind affected by hate, and mind unaffected by hate as mind unaffected by hate. He understands mind affected by delusion as mind affected by delusion, and mind unaffected by delusion as mind unaffected by delusion. He understands contracted mind as contracted mind, and distracted mind as distracted mind. He understands exalted mind as exalted mind, and unexalted mind as unexalted mind. He understands surpassed mind as surpassed mind, and unsurpassed mind as unsurpassed mind. He understands concentrated mind as concentrated mind, and unconcentrated mind as unconcentrated mind. He understands liberated mind as liberated mind, and unliberated mind as unliberated mind." What the Buddha has stated in this extract from the Mahasatipatthana Sutta is really a summary of how we should contemplate the mind as mind. It is fundamentally about understanding our mental state and knowing how they come to arise in the mind and how they come to pass away. When we understand this, then we know when they are present, and we also know when they are absent. So when we first read the Buddha's words, it can seem as if we don't really understand or know what this means, but that's not the case. We've been practicing a number of sutta meditations, So such things as the Vatukama Sutta, Anumana Sutta, Karanimetta Sutta, understanding the four nutriments, the doorways to Nibbana, and many other suttas. And these are the things that actually help us. We've actually been contemplating the mind as mine. So what we'll do is we'll examine this bit by bit. So the first part is understanding the lustful mind as lustful mind, so saragam citta, and also understanding the lust-free mind as lust-free mind, so vitaragam citta. So from the Vatupama Sutta, this is similar to understanding when there are mental states such as covetousness and unequal greed or excessive wanting in the mind. If so, this is the lustful mind. And when they are not present or we have abandoned them with wisdom, this is the lust-free mind. The same applies for the evil or bad wishes which are associated with desire for sensual pleasures when we meditate on the Anumana Sutta or the Ananga Sutta. Or in the case of the first profitable direction where we've taken the physical nutriment and gone the wrong way through desire due to the perversion of attractive in the unattractive and the escalation of sensual desire. In this case, we understand this is the lustful mind. And when we apply the medicine of the first doorway to Nibbana, so painful practice with slow realization resulting in immeasurable loving kindness, this is where we know the lust-free mind. So then the second part is understanding the hateful mind as hateful mind, so sadosa citta, and understanding the hate-free mind as hate-free mind, vitadosam citta. So again, from Vatupama Sutta, this is understanding when there are mental states such as ill will, anger, hostility, and more in the mind. If so, this is the hateful mind. When they're not present or we have abandoned them with wisdom, this is the hate-free mind. And the same applies for the different forms of anger as well as aversion to being reproved or given feedback when we meditate on the Anumana Sutta. Or with the second unprofitable direction where we take contact as nutriment, and we've gone the wrong way through hate due to the perversion that there is pleasure in the painful and it is the escalation of ill will, we understand this to be the hateful mind. And when we apply the medicine of the second doorway to Nibbana or painful practice with quick realization, culminating in immeasurable compassion, then we understand this to be the hate-free mind. And then the third one is understanding the deluded mind as deluded mind, so samohang chittam, and understanding the undiluted mind as the undiluted mind, so vitamohang chittam. So here again, with the Vatupama Sutta or Anumana Sutta, when we understand that there are mental states such as arrogance, arrogance, conceit, disparaging, competition, obstinacy, and so on in the mind, if so, this is the deluded mind. And when they are not present or we have abandoned them with wisdom, this is the undiluted mind. Or with the third and fourth unprofitable direction, so mental volition as nutriment and going the wrong way through fear due to the perversion that there is me and mine in the not me and mine, and escalating with wrong views, or we take consciousness as nutriment and we've gone the wrong way through delusion due to the perversion of impermanence or the perversion of permanence in the impermanent, and that's the escalation of ignorance, then we understand this is the deluded mind. But when we apply the medicine of the third and fourth doorways to Nibbana, so pleasant practices with slow and quick realization, resulting in immeasurable joy and immeasurable equanimity, then we understand this to be the undiluted mind. Simply understanding that these first three, when the mind is affected by lust, hate, and delusion, we can see how these mental states are driven by the perversion that there is me and mine in the not me and mine. These mental states arise from a very strong sense of self, and it's linked to the other perversions as well, but me and mine is dominant. So our sutta meditations where we do the inner bathing are very helpful because that's the anatta or not me and mine practice as we've highlighted before. So let's keep going. The fourth part is understanding the contracted mind as the contracted mind, sankittang chittang, and understanding the distracted mind as the distracted mind, vikittang chittang. So let's look at the first one. Sankittang is translated here as contracted, And it can also be translated as shrunk or constricted. The mind can contract or shrink when there's dullness and drowsiness, so thinamitta in Pali. Often we reflect on this state as if the mind is sinking rather than being lifted. So examples include when we experience discontentment, or we're feeling inert or lethargic, or when we're vegging on the couch and feeling drowsy, or when we've overindulged in food or drink and the mind has weakened, or we're simply feeling sluggish. So we know when the mind is contracted or in a shrunken state. And of course, the Buddha has given us medicine for this kind of state, such as arousing energy or perceiving light. And so when we apply that medicine, we know that the mind is no longer contracted. And then vikittang is translated here as distracted, and it can also be translated as disrupted or dispersed. So this is where the mind is scattered or dispersed, similar to restlessness. So the Pali word here is udaccha. It's the opposite of when the mind is calm and collected. So here the mind is unsettled or disturbed by things that provoke delight. And so we go from one thing to another with restlessness. So this sounds like I'll do this, and then no, I'll do that. And then we go back and forth. So for example, we might get disturbed by something we do with our job, but at the same time, something with the family needs doing. So the mind is troubled by those two things, and it goes back and forth between the work matter versus what the family needs are. Or the mind gets stuck in something that gives some sort of enjoyment or gratification, and then we worry that we are holding on to that thing. And it sounds like, oh, this is really good, but what if I get stuck in this and lose sight of my goal? So for example, in meditation, we may access the higher concentrations, but there may be restlessness over whether we can abide there or whether another meditation is better. And so the mind gets distracted or dispersed. So we know when the mind is in this distracted or restless state. And again, the Buddha has given us medicine for this kind of mental state, which includes uplifting the mind to higher concentration. But then there are also subtle versions of restlessness where these higher concentrations exist, but at the same time, the medicine is that we want to go towards Nibbana. So the subtle versions of restlessness are in our higher concentrations, and that's where we need to go towards Nibbana. So then the fifth part is understanding the exalted mind as the exalted mind, so Mahagattang Chitta, and understanding the unexalted mind as the unexalted mind, so Amahagattang Chitta. So Mahagattang is translated as exalted, and it can also be translated as expansive or developed to a supramundane level or become great. So this is when hindrances are absent and the mind has developed to a superior degree by entering into the jhanas or the formless attainments or even to the liberations. So we know when the mind is in this state, having developed our minds following the Buddha's instructions, it's when we've done our soothe the meditations and lifted the mind to that state. So in that case, we also know when it's not uplifted to those states as well, which is where we predominantly sit with our mind. It's not uplifted like that. And the sixth part is understanding the surpassed mind as the surpassed mind, so anuttarang chittang, and understanding the unsurpassed mind as the unsurpassed mind, so sauttarang chittang. So anuttarang is translated as surpassed, and it can also be translated as supreme, superior, higher, or above, sometimes also unrivaled or unparalleled. And so this means that there is nothing higher without superior. It's incomparable, second to none, unsurpassed. Second to none, excellent, preeminent. And then with the sauttarang, this is translated as unsurpassed. And it can also be translated as inferior or lesser, which means having something above or higher, having a superior. So as we know, the Buddha teaches the wisdom path to get out of this whole mess of suffering. So in simple terms, the surpassed mind is when the mind has wisdom, and the unsurpassed mind is when the mind is without wisdom. When we keep developing the mind with higher wisdom through the different sutta meditations, and we keep developing more and more wisdom, we keep developing to the surpassed mind. So, for example, let's take the loving kindness meditation where we wish, may all beings be happy and well. A person who develops loving kindness without proper wisdom, in that case, the concentration is only a little when it doesn't have wisdom. It hasn't reached the highest level, so it's unsurpassed. In the case of a person who develops loving kindness with proper wisdom, cultivates it to all living beings with the true understanding of the first noble truth of suffering, that all beings are subject to suffering, which means birth, aging, sickness, death, and more, and with the 10 skilled states, including the right view of not me and mine, then this concentration that arises is surpassed or superior to the one without wisdom. It's the difference between how we previously cultivated loving kindness and how we now cultivate loving kindness, having learned the Karaniya Metta Sutta properly. Formerly, it was unsurpassed with only some concentration, and now we can reach the surpassed mind by cultivating it correctly, and we know that concentration is indeed superior. The level of superiority depends on one's direct insight or wisdom penetrated towards the Dhamma. And then the seventh part is understanding the concentrated mind as the concentrated mind, samahittang chittang, and understanding the unconcentrated mind as the unconcentrated mind, asamahittang chittang. So samahittang is translated as concentrated, and it can also be translated as calm, collected, serene, settled, or firm. As we develop our sutta meditations, we come to know when the mind is concentrated and serene, and naturally we also know when it is not. And then the eighth one is understanding the liberated mind as the liberated mind, so vimuttang chittang, and understanding the unliberated mind as the unliberated mind, avimuttang chittang. Vimuttang is translated as liberated, and it can also be translated as released, emancipated, or freed. And this is where we develop the mind to experience the liberations as well as noble attainments. For example, if we've gone to measurable loving kindness, so metta apamana, by developing the first doorway to nibbana, so this is painful way with slow realization, and then we experience liberation of mind by loving kindness, so metta cetta vimutti, then we know the liberated mind. And when we fall from that state, we know that it is no longer there, so then it is the unliberated mind. So we can see contemplating and understanding the mind in all these different ways helps us to overcome the perversion of me and mine in the not me and mine, or self in the not self. By using Buddha's tools and instructions through the suttas that we've learned, this gives us the ability to understand how these mental states arise and pass away, which makes this a true wisdom pathway. This is the early part of the third doorway to Nibbana. So as we start to see how we construct both wholesome and unwholesome states, and we further develop this as we keep going with this inside pathway. So in this meditation, having uplifted the mind to the third jhana, we contemplate the mind to ensure that we don't fall by knowing the nature of the mind and these mental states, and having the skill and proficiency to uplift it and maintain it. We now come to the third abiding, which is known as the Noble Abode or Arya Vihara. This Noble Abode is the medicine for the bond of views, and the bond of views is what compels us or bonds us to holding wrong view. In the Upasatha Sutta, this is Anguttara Nikaya, Chapter 4, Discourse Number 190, the Buddha addressed the Sangha on the Upasatha and declared that there were those in the assembly who dwell having attained the state of Devas. So this is the heavenly abode. Those who dwell having attained the state of the Brahmas, so these are the Brahma-viharas. And those who dwell having attained the imperturbable, which is the Anenja-vihara. And those who dwell having attained the state of the noble ones, so this is Arya-vihara. So to recap, the first doorway to Nibbana, we develop the heavenly abode, Dibba-vihara. The second doorway to Nibbana, we develop the divine abode, so Brahma-vihara. And now with this third doorway to Nibbana, we develop the noble abode, Arya Vihara. And for the fourth doorway to Nibbana, we will be developing in a later session the imperturbable abode, so Anenja Vihara. So in this particular Upasatha Sutta, the noble abode or state of the noble ones is where One understands as it really is, this is suffering. Understands as it really is, this is the origin of suffering. Understands as it really is, this is the cessation of suffering. Understands as it really is, this is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. What the Noble Abode really means is noble attainment, or attaining to the supramundane path. This is how we realize, or we have realized path and fruit, so Magapala Citta, and we have penetrated with wisdom some of the Four Noble Truths, or in the case of an Arahant, fully penetrating the Four Noble Truths. When we develop the Noble Eightfold Path with its wholesome states, and we establish and lead with the right view, this results in wisdom. This is the Buddha's noble course that we are pursuing that culminates in Nibbana, similar to how one pursues a university course that culminates in a degree or master's certificate. We need noble attainment to keep developing the Buddha's noble course or noble path. A person who hasn't yet realized noble attainment has to continually lift the mind when it falls all the way down to a lesser state. But a person who has noble attainment has the ability to recognize and catch the mind when it slides. Some greed, hatred, and delusion has been eradicated, not simply suppressed. So one's mind doesn't fall that low, and one with noble attainment can lift it more easily by applying the wisdom, especially the wisdom by using the Dhamma that one has gained direct insight into. For example, a stream enterer has eradicated gross amount of greed, hatred, and delusion that leads to the unhappy destinations or lower realms. By realizing the fruit of stream entry, one has gained direct insight into the wrong view of me and mine, and has correctly understood it's not me and mine. Therefore, cutting off the fetters of identity view, clinging to virtue and observances and doubt, and cutting off a significant amount of suffering, so innumerable lifetimes of suffering that would have otherwise happened. So noble attainment is not a small thing. The Buddhist has said that stream entry is more precious and valuable than a wheel-turning monarch who exercises sovereignty over the four continents. And it's not worth a 16th part of obtaining the four factors of a stream enterer. And this is in the Chakravarti Raja Sutta in the Samyutta Nikaya. There's a Dhammapada verse, that is number 178, where the Buddha has said, soul sovereignty over the earth or going to a heavenly place, or domination over the entire world, the fruit of stream entry is superior. And so we use all the wholesome Dhammas, including the 37 enlightenment factors, to whatever level of skill or proficiency we have developed them, to help us grow in wholesome quality. And as more Dhamma is penetrated and understood with wisdom, further noble attainment can be realized. And this is what helps to further uplift the mind and make further progress towards Nibbana. If we really start to understand this third doorway to Nibbana, it's fundamentally about noble attainment and maintaining one's noble attainment as skillful means to prevent us from falling back to wrong views and to help us towards the ultimate goal of Nibbana and the cessation of all suffering. So now we need the third right striving, which is the medicine for the bodhicitta of misapprehension, the Paramasa Kayagantha in Pali. In the Padana Sutta, Anguttara Nikaya, chapter 4, discourse number 13, the Buddha stated, he generates desire for the arising of unarisen wholesome state. He makes effort, arouses energy, applies his mind and strives. This is all about the wholesome states that haven't yet arisen. So we generate desire, make effort and strive to develop them. Venerable Nagasena stated when asked a question regarding noble aspiration by King Milinda, on perceiving how the minds of others have been set free, one aspires to enter, as it were, by a leap upon the fruit of stream entry or of the fruit of one's return or of the fruit of non-return in the excellent way, or to gain arahantship itself, and thus applies himself to the attainment of what he has not reached, to the experience of what he has not yet felt, to the realization of what he has not yet realized. So Venerable Nagasena He also gave this simile to accompany this response. He used the simile of a mighty storm that flooded the gullies, brooks, and streams. And so the crowd of people standing fearful and hesitant to cross the stream, not knowing the breadth and depth of the water. But then they saw that a certain person, knowing their own strength and power, they landed safely on the other side. And so the people would aspire to cross to the other side like that person. And so this is the way in which, by conviction, one would aspire to leap into higher things. In the Alavaka Sutta in Samyutta Nikaya, the Buddha spoke of, by conviction, one crosses over the flood. And this was in relation to crossing over the flood of views, and in this case, wrong views. So this is what is pertinent here. So how does this relate to the unarisen wholesome states with respect to this third right striving? The answer is, if one doesn't have any noble attainment, so no magapala, one arouses the desire to have the conviction of a stream entra. So this is sotapanna saddha. And if one is a stream entra, then one has the desire to have the conviction of a once returner, the sakadagami saddha. And if one is a once returner, then one has the desire to have the conviction of a non-returner, anagami saddha. And if one is a non-returner, then one has the desire to have conviction of an arahant, so arahat saddha. So these are the unarisen, wholesome, or kusala states that help us on the noble path. When we keep aspiring and generating desire for these wholesome states all the way up to the conviction of an arahant, how could we not reach the ultimate goal of nibbana? How can we not realize the cessation of all suffering? So we now come to the third wonderful and marvelous idea. So this is the noble truth of the cessation of suffering. This is the medicine for the taint of views. And the taint of views is bound to wrong views, and we have a post-perception that there is permanence. The Buddha has stated, it is the remainderless fading away and ceasing, the giving up, relinquishing, letting go and rejecting of that same craving. This is called the cessation of suffering. So if you recall in the Tathagata Sutta, this was in Samyutta Nikaya, chapter 56, discourse number 12, the Buddha stated that with regard to the first noble truth, suffering needs to be fully understood. With the second noble truth, craving, which is the origin of suffering, is to be abandoned. And with the third noble truth, the cessation of suffering is to be realized. And with the fourth noble truth, the Noble Eightfold Path, the way leading to the cessation of suffering, is to be developed. So with this third doorway to Nibbana, it's the noble truth of the cessation of suffering is what needs to be realized. So when we started this meditation on the third doorway to Nibbana, we began with thoughts of renunciation in order to enter the jhana. As we develop by following the pathway of renunciation, we know we can go beyond the jhanas to realize the formless attainments with the support of equanimity that is unified, and we abandon equanimity that is diverse. By doing so, we see that these higher concentrations are constructed, and we delve into this more as we go along in this inside pathway. So they're not to be taken as me and mine, and we also understand that they don't last. There's no permanency. When we have penetrated this with wisdom, we go beyond even the formless attainments to atamayatang, which literally means not made of that, or not consisting of that, or not I am that. In the suttas, atamayatang has been translated as non-identification, which essentially means it's the absence of conceiving any of the five aggregates as self or belonging to self. So taking them as not me and mine, not identifying with any of that. And when we have investigated and wisely contemplated, and some of you will have done that in other sutta meditations, including Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, including Vamika Sutta, Chula Sunyata Sutta, then we've seen that it's all constructed. And so we can renunciate all of that. Atamayatang is really another definition for Nibbana as not made of anything. And this is really important thing to wisely contemplate, because it's common to misapprehend and think of Nibbana as an object. In Pali, we would think of it as an aramana. or we think of it as a thing. In Pali, it means vatu. But King Milinda, who had many questions about Nibbana that he posed to Venerable Nagasena, came to realize that Nibbana is not an object, it's not a thing. So in one instance, in the Nibbana Rupa Santana Panha, so this is in the questions of King Milinda, the king asked, Venerable Nagasena, this Nibbana that you are always talking of, can you make clear by metaphor or explanation or reason or argument the form or figure or duration or measure of it? And Venerable Nagasena responded by saying, Nibbana, O King, has nothing similar to it. By no metaphor or explanation or reason or argument can its form or figure or duration or measure be made clear. And then in another question, the king asked, Venerable Nagasena, does there exist the spot, either in the direction of the east or of the south or of the west or of the north, either above or below or on the horizon where Nibbana is stored up? And Venerable Nagasena responded by saying, there is no spot, O King, either in the east or the south or the west or the north, either above or below or on the horizon where Nibbana is. And he went on to also add, there is no spot, O King, where Nibbana is situate. And yet Nibbana is, and he who orders his life right will by wise contemplation realize Nibbana, just as fire exists, and yet there is no place where fire by itself is stored up. But if a man rubs two sticks together, the fire comes. Just so, O King, Nibbana exists, though there is no spot where it is stored up. And he who orders his life aright will, by wise contemplation, realize Nibbana. So it's important to realize that Nibbana is to be found within, internally, by abandoning greed, hatred, and delusion. It can't be found outside. It's not an external thing. So in the context of the third noble truth, when we talk about the cessation, we're talking about the complete cessation of suffering, meaning the realization of Nibbana. The third noble truth means we abandon all things on the pathway to renunciation. By abandoning the unwholesome states, we develop the wholesome states, and then we abandon those wholesome states as well. So this leads us to the determination for wisdom, because as you can see from looking at the cessation of suffering, we need to penetrate this with wisdom. And so the determination for wisdom is really the supreme wisdom for the knowledge of the destruction of all suffering. And in this, in Pali, this is Sabbadukkha Kaya Jnana. The determination for wisdom is the medicine for the flood of views. So the determination for wisdom arises when we realize the third noble truth of the cessation of suffering. When we know and understand the cessation of suffering is the cessation of, when we know the cessation of craving is the cessation of suffering, we have the determination for wisdom because we want to give up all the things that is on the pathway to renunciation. So the teaching that is key here is the Dhatuvibhanga Sutta, so Majjhima Nikaya Discourse number 140. This is heavily focused on the determination for wisdom because it dispels ignorance by seeing things as they really are, which means they're not mine, they're not me, they're not self, and being able to give up the wrong view. When we do this, when we penetrate this, then wisdom arises. So the Buddha strongly encouraged us not to neglect wisdom. So this means we actively develop wisdom rather than being neglectful. So in the Dhatuvibhanga Sutta, the Buddha instructed us to wisely contemplate the six elements. So these are the four great elements, so earth, air, water, and heat. And that also includes the space element and also consciousness element. So I won't go through that whole contemplation again here because we did do a deep dive in part one of the exposition of the elements. So I'll simply summarize here. If we contemplate really well the six elements and we've seen it as it actually is with proper wisdom, what happens is the mind becomes disenchanted. It becomes dispassionate towards these six elements. This means we don't take delight, we don't welcome, we don't remain holding. So nābhinandati, nābhivadati, nājosayatitati in Pali. So with the cessation of craving comes the cessation of delight. The cessation of delight comes the cessation of clinging. Then the cessation of existence, the cessation of birth, the cessation of aging and death, and the cessation of this whole mess of suffering. So this is how we understand the cessation of craving is the cessation of suffering. We give up the craving for these six elements and we go towards cessation. In the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, the Buddha also stated, he does not form any condition or generate any volition tending towards either being or non-being. So having seen the truth, we make the determination not to construct, nor have any volition or thoughts inclined towards coming to exist or non-existence. Initially, having gone beyond form, comprising of the four great elements, we find happiness, vastness, radiance in higher concentrations. But then when we heed the Buddha's instructions and we're able to know for ourselves that even if we stay for a very long time in the imperturbable, these formless attainments, they are still constructed. There's danger in being reborn to those planes because if there's no noble attainment, we'll fall directly to the lower realms for a very long time. And if we have noble attainment, we'll remain in those things for a very long time. And the Buddha does not recommend that. In many suttas, and particularly to the monks and in the Dhammapada, the Buddha would encourage, don't just, even if someone was a non-returner, the Buddha would say to that bhikkhu, keep going towards the realization of Nibbana, don't delay. And as we know, in the formless planes, the lifespans are 20,000 eons, 40,000 eons, 60,000 eons, and 84,000 eons. So it's a very long time. So it's important to apply the Buddha's instructions to have a really genuine insight. So this step means that one has to have a very genuine insight in the meditation, understanding the arising and passing away of the six elements, the construction, the impermanence, and so on. It's how we see these higher concentrations in particular as constructed, and therefore they won't last. It's not a place we wish to abide in. It's not a place we wish to be deceived by, because there's no permanency. And so they're connected with suffering. And this is how we overcome the taint of views. If we overcome the taint of views, it helps us to overcome the taint of sensual pleasure and also the taint of ignorance. And therefore we overcome also the taint of existence as well. The Buddha also says in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, since he does not form any condition or generate any volition tending towards either being or non-being, so existence or non-existence, he does not cling to anything in this world. When he does not cling, he is not agitated. When he is not agitated, he personally attains Nibbana. So with this understanding, if there is no volition, there is no more constructing, and we do not cling to anything. When we don't cling to anything, we don't get agitated or excited about anything in the world. And so the Buddha gives the simile of the oil lamp. Just as an oil lamp burns in dependence on oil and a wick, and when the oil and wick are used up, if it does not get any more fuel, it is extinguished from lack of fuel. So too, when he feels a feeling terminating with the body, a feeling terminating with life, he understands, I feel a feeling terminating with life. He understands, on the dissolution of the body, with the ending of life, all that is felt, not being delighted in, will become cool right here. So this is the determination for wisdom that is the supreme knowledge or the supreme wisdom of the knowledge of the destruction of all suffering. And this is what we develop and use to go towards Nibbana. When we have the determination of wisdom, then energy or effort arises. And this is the concentration due to effort, the Virya Samadhi that arises. It's the medicine for the Dhatu views. Because we heavily contemplated all the way up to the determination for wisdom to overcome wrong views, we have removed delusion and what is rooted in delusion. This third doorway to Nibbana leans heavily on energy and effort to progress through this inside pathway. When we apply the third right striving to generate unarisen wholesome states, we jump-started all the wholesome dhammas. Now when we come to this part, and develop the concentration due to effort, it's to help us maintain the wholesome state or noble attainments and prevent them from declining. We want to protect them and keep the mind uplifted. With the Dhatu views, the poison embedded there is the me and mind due to sick perceptions. But we have removed that. And so we don't want any more sick perceptions to come back into the mind, such as permanency, pleasure, me and mine, and more. For example, in the previous part, at the determination for wisdom, we understood even the higher concentrations are constructed. Therefore, it's impermanent, suffering, subject to change, and not fit to be regarded as me and mine. So now we don't even want to have conceit about those higher concentrations and take them as mine. Because if we have conceit, then the mind immediately weakens and falls. So if we're neglectful or forgetful at any point in this meditation, we can slip and fall back to wrong views. Now, we can also protect our noble attainment by recollecting the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. When we do so, we recollect their noble quality and contemplate that we wish to walk this noble path as they have, to belong to the group of the noble ones who are freed of greed, hatred, and delusion. So it's helpful to think of ourselves as spiritually immature, even if we've practiced meditation for a long time. In this way, we don't entertain or accept wrong advice. Instead, we entertain and accept the advice of the noble ones, of the Buddha. And we realize when the Buddha says that we can still be deceived, despite however long we've been developing the mind and meditating, that when this happens, the Buddha says we can fall from these states. And so when we are suvicca, easy to instruct, and accept the advice of the Buddha and the noble ones, then we remember the Buddha's words that what is false has a deceptive nature and what is true is undeceptive, and that is Nibbana. And so this concentration due to energy or effort is very, very important. What we need at this point are the seven factors of enlightenment, the Sattabhujanga, because they help us to slant, slope, and incline towards Nibbana. We know this from the Kuttagara Sutta. And the Bhujangas also strengthen the mind so it doesn't fall for sick perceptions. And for this reason, the Bhujangas are the medicine for perception as the steadying point for consciousness establishing. We have examined how to activate the Bhujangas using the Sila Sutta, and I'll summarize here. So when we associate with the noble ones, having heard the Dhamma, we get inspired and physically and mentally withdraw so we can recollect the Dhamma and wisely contemplate to arouse Satisambhujanga. We can contemplate if it is impermanent, suffering, subject to change, is it fit to regard it as me and mine? If there is death, there is no permanency, and we realize we're holding on to the physical nutriment as the perception of self or me and mine, which is causing us huge problems. We did this in our past birth, and we reflect when we died, we birthed this one. And here again, we're repeating this process. So when we have this realization, we give up the physical nutriment, having acknowledged the sickness in our perceptions. Dwelling mindfully now, we arouse the Dhamma Vicheya Sambhujanga. So we discriminate, examine, and make an investigation of the Dhamma with wisdom. So this is really about seeing dependent origination, Paticchasamuppada in Pali. We make effort to discriminate the arising and passing away phenomena of suffering, recognizing we cannot construct anything that lasts. Therefore, if we come to another birth due to dependent origination, we can only expect this whole mess of suffering again. So having thoroughly investigated and seen the truth clearly, such as doing a full inquiry, we heavily incline towards the complete cessation of suffering. As a result, we activate Virya Sambhujanga. Energy or effort is aroused without slackening or wavering towards Nibbana. And due to Sati Sambhujanga, Dhamma Vicheya Sambhujanga, and Virya Sambhujanga, we activate Piti Sambhujanga. As we said before, it's a Dhamma Niyama. When our mind is uplifted with rapture, we're so happy. So our body becomes tranquil and the mind also becomes tranquil. And this is the basis for Pasati Sambhujanga. Here we need to ensure we have tranquility of the mind and tranquility of the mental states. Like finding a shade under the tree from the burning hot sun. We don't wish to burn with greed, hatred, and delusion. So we ensure we don't have any unskilled mental states like derogation, disparaging, envy, stinginess, and so on. When the body is tranquil and the mind is happy, the mind becomes concentrated. So this is how we arouse Samadhi Sambhujanga. Again, this is a Dhamma Niyama, the result of contemplating with wisdom and making effort towards developing the Bhujangas. This concentration has the desire for the complete cessation of suffering, which is the desire for Nibbana. If we see that we are grasping to pleasure due to concentration, then we understand attachment lies latent in pleasurable feeling. And we remember that we can't sustain this pleasurable feeling. It is subject to change, and painful feeling is its counterpart. So we arouse the upeka sambhojanga by giving up pleasure and pain and going towards equanimity that is more purified and stable. So at this point, all bhojangas are now active. The bhojangas lead to immeasurable joy, and this is mudita apamana, which is the medicine for going the wrong way with fear, baya agati gamanam. When we come to this final part of the meditation, the insight is very strong about how much we misapprehend by falling for sick perceptions and wrong views. When all the wrong or unwholesome dhammas are active, it's easy to see why we continuously live in fear. It's so apparent. But this is only seen and understood having progressively developed the mind through the Buddha's instructions and having clear comprehension of both unwholesome and wholesome dhammas. Lots of fear falls away when we contemplate this third doorway to Nibbana, because we have methodically removed the wrong views and established the right view. And we have been actively preventing sickness to come back into the mind using the wholesome dhammas and noble attainments. So how do we reach immeasurable joy? It's through thoroughly understanding, by meditating on this third doorway to Nibbana, how we need noble attainment to protect the mind from greed, hatred, and delusion, and keep developing the Buddha's noble path. When there is noble attainment, the mind can be uplifted more easily to cut off unwholesome states and overcome sickness of the mind and sickness of the mental states. Without noble attainment, it's much harder. With only path attainment, it's still hard, as the person may not know how to lift the mind. By having noble attainment, and that means attainment of both path and fruit, it's very beneficial. A person with noble attainment simply has to remember the Buddha's instructions or remember how they previously lifted the mind through a meditation. For example, it's easier for a person with noble attainment to access the jhanas and formless attainments. When we talked about establishing mindfulness by contemplating if it is impermanent, suffering, subject to change, is it fit to be regarded as me and mine? A person with noble attainment can quickly go to the fourth jhana or the sphere of nothingness. Or just by reflecting on the Noble Eightfold Path, such a person can immediately go to the sphere of nothingness. And sometimes they don't even know that they do that. So it's important to frequently meditate and lift the mind if one has noble attainment. It helps with developing and attaining further, which has been encouraged by the Buddha. So when we cultivate immeasurable loving kindness, having understood the noble truth of suffering, that we wish all beings to be happy and well, now when we cultivate immeasurable joy, having understood how we realize the cessation of suffering, meaning Nibbana, we wish, may those who haven't realized noble attainment, may they realize noble attainment. And may those who have realized noble attainment, may they uplift and maintain noble attainment without falling and develop further. What prevents us from wishing people to have noble attainment or to uplift and maintain noble attainment are unwholesome states, such as derogation, disparaging, envy, and stinginess. If these arise, then it means the perversion of me and mine is active again. When we take refuge or get swayed by the world rather than having distaste for the world, unwholesome states have the opportunity to activate again. The Buddha said, fear is suffering, dukkha bayatena. So when we reach immeasurable joy, we are wishing all beings to be free from fear or free from suffering. The most meaningful or tangible freedom from suffering comes through noble attainment. With more and more greed, hatred, and delusion genuinely eradicated, starting from realizing path and fruit of stream entry all the way to path and fruit of arahantship and the complete realization of Nibbana. Only when a person has noble attainment do they truly have the experience of happiness and well-being that is imbued with the cessation of suffering. The most valuable being, an arahant who has destroyed all greed, hatred, and delusion, who is fully liberated from suffering. They are our true role models, other than the Buddhas. We wish people to realize noble attainment or to uplift and maintain noble attainment without falling with this understanding. And this is how we reach immeasurable joy. To summarize, there are 10 parts to this inside pathway for the third doorway to Nibbana. So I'll summarize the steps. We begin the pleasant practice with slow realization by entering into the jhanas. And the first part requires us to enter into at least the first jhana, establishing right concentration. Depending on one's skill, one can go through painful practice with slow realization to get to the first jhana, or contemplate another of the sutta meditations, whichever meditation helps you to enter into the jhanas. From there, we need to come to the third jhana. If we are in the first jhana, we have the rapture and happiness, so the pittisukha, born of concentration. So we let go of thought, born of seclusion. So we let go of thought and examination and reach the second jhana. Then we realize the second jhana has its limitations because it's linked to a physical experience. So we let go of rapture and enter into the third jhana, which only has mental happiness. Having lifted the mind to the third jhana, possessing clear comprehension, we contemplate the mind as mind. And to understand the nature of the mind and its mental state, we contemplate and understand lustful mind as lustful mind, and lust-free mind as lust-free mind, hateful mind as hateful mind, and hate-free mind as hate-free mind. We understand deluded mind as deluded mind, and undeluded mind as undeluded mind. We understand contracted mind as contracted mind, and distracted mind as distracted mind. We understand exalted mind as exalted mind, and unexalted mind as unexalted mind. We understand surpassed mind as surpassed mind, and unsurpassed mind as unsurpassed mind. We understand concentrated mind as concentrated mind, and unconcentrated mind as unconcentrated mind. We understand liberated mind as liberated mind, and unliberated mind as unliberated mind. So by contemplating the mind as mind, we want to be able to prevent it from falling to lower states. So you contemplate that by going through and just using examples so we understand the distinction. Then the fourth step is we need the noble abode, so the Aryavihara, to help us to keep the mind uplifted, to continue to develop the Buddha's noble path and penetrate more Dhamma. So as we said before, the noble abode is really about noble attainment, attaining to the supramundane path, having penetrated with wisdom the Four Noble Truths, or in the case of an arahant, fully penetrating the Four Noble Truths. Now we need the third right striving, so we make effort, arouse energy, apply our mind and strive to generate desire for the arising of unarisen wholesome states. So what are these unarisen wholesome states? As we said, if one does not have noble attainment, one has the desire for the conviction of a stream enterer. If one is a stream enterer, one has the desire for the conviction of a once returner. If one is a once returner, one has the desire for the conviction of a non-returner. If one is a non-returner, one has the desire for the conviction of an arahant. And this is very similar to what we go through when we looked at Silabanta Sutta as well in Samyutta Nikaya, discourse number 122, chapter 22. So by aspiring and generating desire for these wholesome states, all the way up to the conviction of an arahant, this is how we realize the ultimate goal of Nibbana, and that is the cessation of all suffering. So we now contemplate the noble truth of the cessation of suffering. So this is Dukkha Nirodham Arya Satchang, and how it means that we need to abandon attachment to all the things on the Buddha's pathway to renunciation, from sensual pleasures, jhanas, formless attainments, all those things. We realize all are constructed. All these wholesome things are equally unwholesome and wholesome things are constructed. And when we come to Atthamayatam, we remember it's another definition for Nibbana as not made of anything. So we go towards Nibbana by abandoning all the unwholesome states, and we develop the wholesome states and we abandon those as well. This leads to the determination for wisdom, so Panyadhitana, for the knowledge of the destruction of all suffering, Here we contemplate all six elements according to the Buddha's instruction in the Dhatuvibhanga Sutta, seeing them with proper wisdom. We contemplate the four great elements internally and externally as not me and mine. Then we contemplate the elements of space and consciousness and understand how they are constructed, that they are impermanent, suffering, and subject to change, and also not to be taken as mine. With this understanding, like the oil lamp that has no fuel, if there is no volition, there is no more constructing, and this is how we go towards Nibbana. So then we have the concentration due to energy or effort, Virya Samadhi. This arises when we have this determination for wisdom. This concentration helps us to maintain the wholesome states, noble attainments, to prevent us from declining. We don't want to fall back to the wrong views and the unwholesome states. And when we now arouse and develop the seven factors of enlightenment, they help us to slant, slope, and incline towards Nibbana, but they also strengthen our mind so it doesn't fall back for sick perception. We can progressively develop the Bhujangas according to the Buddha's instructions in the Sila Sutta. So we arouse Satisambhujanga by contemplating if it is impermanent, suffering, subject to change, is it fit to be regarded as me and mine? And we give up the physical nutriment. When we arouse Dhammavicaya Sambhojanga, we see the dependent origination. We're making effort to discriminate and examine the arising and passing away phenomena of suffering. Having thoroughly investigated and seen the truth, we heavily incline towards the complete cessation of suffering. So we have the Nabhinandati, Nabhivadati, Najosayatithati, and we give up the craving. When we arouse Virya Sambhojanga, this is by having unwavering effort towards Nibbana. And then due to the other three, Sati Sambhojanga, Dhammavicaya Sambhojanga, Virya Sambhojanga, we arouse Piti Sambhojanga. This is when our mind is uplifted with rapture. We're so happy, so our body becomes tranquil and the mind also becomes tranquil. And this is the basis for Pasadi Sambhojanga. And here we need to protect the mind to ensure there is tranquility of the mind and tranquility of the mental states. So we think of finding shade under a tree from the burning hot sun. We don't wish to burn with greed, hatred, and delusion. So we double check that we don't have any unskilled mental states, such as derogation, disparaging, envy, stinginess, or similar. When the body is tranquil and the mind is happy, the mind becomes concentrated, and therefore we arouse Samadhi Sambhojanga. If we see that we are grasping to pleasure due to the concentration, then we remember that we can't sustain this pleasurable feeling. It's subject to change, and painful feeling is its counterpart. So we arouse Upeka Sambhojanga, going beyond pleasure and pain towards equanimity that is more purified and stable. So by developing the Bhujangas, we can reach immeasurable joy, mudita apamana. We understand the importance of noble attainment for realizing cessation of suffering, realizing Nibbana. So we wish, may those beings who haven't realized noble attainment, may they realize noble attainment. May those beings who have realized some noble attainment, may they uplift and maintain noble attainment without falling. And we can keep cultivating immeasurable joy. And if we reflect on the mind in this state, we can see that it is very purified of all the wrong views. It's uplifted with the highest right view, which is the noble truth of the cessation of suffering. This inside pathway demonstrates the precision with which the Buddha helps us to purify the mind with right view. And the tools to maintain it, so we are free of the sickness of our perception. And in this way, we can see why even with the Silavanta Sutta, where we're meant to meditate on not having sick perceptions, this is what the Buddha encourages for a worldling, what the Buddha encourages for a stream entrer, what the Buddha encourages for a once returner, anagami, and even an arahant. And so this is why we see that sick perceptions, understanding them, overcoming them, it's so very important. So we've now come to the end of our session. Let's express our gratitude to the Buddha for these powerful teachings. Let's also express our gratitude to our other teachers, parents, and good friends who encourage us on this Noble Eightfold Path. And we can share the merits of our wholesome time together with all sentient beings. May all beings be happy and well. May all beings be free from suffering. And in light of immeasurable joy, may all beings who haven't realized noble attainment, may they realize noble attainment. And may those who have realized noble attainment, may they uplift the mind and maintain noble attainment without falling. So blessings of the Triple Gem to all of you, wishing you all well. May you continue to find happiness in the Buddha's teachings, develop the Noble Eightfold Path, and continue to grow in wholesome quality.